Yeah, I tell you a story about his young life when he was in Italy. He was 6 years old. He was an orphan, so nobody would take care of him but his uncle. And his uncle was a pastor of a church in Italy. So he raised him
in the directory.
He raised him well, you know, smart. And the kid was going to be a priest. He was 7, 8, 9 years old. 10. He used to go around to making collections, you know, lighting candles and stuff like that. Well, when the kid was about 18 years old, it was St. Anthony's Day. They used to make little breads, you know.
Oh, yes, St. Anthony's.
And they used to go around selling for a half a liter in Italy. This is in Italy, you know. And so he knocked on the door, you know, and who pops up? My mother. And he says, hey, he says, you're the new priest in the parish? He says, no, he says, I'm a helper. He said, but I'm going to be a priest. I don't know, she says. This is talking in Italian, you know. She put her evil eye on my father. She used to go out with my father. What happens? They wanted to get married. They wouldn't allow them to get married because my father was 18 and she was 26.
Oh, she was older.
She was
26
older.
Years old. You know?
Yeah, they frowned on that.
My mother was a term. She had a big mind just like I had. Oh, I always butt into business, you know, like. She says, I'm going to marry him. He says, I like him. I love my man. He said, my father said, yeah, I love you too. He said, well, let's get married. So what do? They run to another paese, another town, and they got married in another town. The cops from this town, Durana Castello, whatever you call it, they went over to that town and they arrested my father. They arrested him for getting married.
Not her, that she was
not her. They arrested my father. So, but then they went down, everything was all straightened out in the town.
It out.
And then they come into this country in 1903. Yeah.
Welcome, one and all, to I Remember When, Times Gone But Not Forgotten, a series of radio programs on the history of Philadelphia through the memories of those who have lived, loved, and labored in this, the fairest city in the land. While we listen to the Tulip Serenade is performed by the Benjamin Franklin Hotel Orchestra, return with us now to the days when teenagers didn't know where babies came from. You didn't marry outside your own kind, and eloping was the best way to get away from the strict old world fathers, as we take you back to the days of real romance in a show entitled The Heart is an Involuntary Muscle.
My mother grew up on Queen Street, and it was there that when she was about 14 to 16, well, she was 16 when I was born in 1914. She could not have been much more than 14 when she was married. It was an arranged marriage. They usually had what they call a shotkin, or the sort of person that you hear about in Fiddler on the Roof, the matchmaker type of person, who arranged this marriage. My father was about 20 years older than my mother.
20 years older?
Older. In other words, if she was 14, he was 34 when he got married.
Now, courtship in the old country could be filled with perils, and though arranged marriages like that of Ben's parents were not to take hold in Philadelphia, parents did attempt to select their offspring's mates in the same way it had been done for generations in the old country. But the immigrants who arrived in Philadelphia landed in a society with its own quite distinctive notions about romance and courtship. In the streets, alleys, and row houses of the ethnic neighborhoods, a prolonged struggle raged on for decades between immigrant parents intent on maintaining traditional prerogatives and their Americanizing children, who often saw no reason not to date, love, and marry the person of their own choosing, regardless of ethnicity, profession, or parental approval. Well, today we're going to take a look back at romance in the old days. Hear the tales of some battles won and lost. Right now, let's begin with the story of Frank and the Italian shoemaker.
Oh, yeah, a lot of that.
Those days
Yeah, sure, I was that way.
You mean those days?
Yeah, a lot of the fathers of goddamn should pay them to go run away and get, I know, 2 or 3 cases there. They're too strict, some of them were really, especially the girl. The boy had a lot of leeway, but if they're afraid of any girl that goes out, they wouldn't trust me from here to there. What are you kidding? I kept praying. What are you kidding? I kept a company of them for 2 years with my wife. I never took her out.
What's this, Sam?
I kept company for 2 years for my wife and my wife, and I never took her out unless my father-in-law came along.
Really?
Sure.
Well, how did you get around that?
Oh, well, I wore him down eventually. Yeah, eventually wore him down.
You know, I think I'm mad.
You know, that's the worst mistake he ever made when he said I couldn't marry his daughter. And I said, I'm going to marry that girl for the last thing I do. Okay, how long it is? I had other girls. And maybe sometime when I look back, maybe that was his idea. He played a little psychology on me. Yeah, well, 2 years.
So you courted her for 2 years with your father-in-law in tow.
Yeah, father-in-law was a shoemaker, and when I say shoemaker, at that time, when I was making $35 a week, he was making $200 and $300 a week.
As a shoemaker,
new shoes he made. Women for doctors and orthopedic and crippled. You'd go there, you'd take a shape of your feet, you'd make what they call a last.
So he was a special.
All these doctors' wives used to call in, Mr. Tonucci, I want a pair of sandals or shoes to match a beige, or send a piece of cloth over, or the dress, or a dress for the... And I used to go around collecting. It was nothing for him to make $300 or $400 a week. I used to go, then we used to become friends. But he said I wasn't good enough for his daughter. This guy around, it was a contractor, see, which was a paisano of his. And he's telling me how good this guy is and how lousy I am. I said, I'll tell you what we'll do. What do you say, he and I come and court your daughter at the same time? He says, I don't have any class. And that's what we did. He figured this guy will show me up. He's got a big car. I had no car. I come by train. He had beautiful clothes. And me, I had my brother's jacket on. In fact, if I didn't get in there ahead of him, I even wouldn't have that. And she's sitting in the middle. And he'd go get wine for her, for this guy. And I would turn around and hug her a little bit. He hollered like hell in the kitchen. I was hugging the girl. He postponed my marriage 3 times. I could write a book on it. We had so much fun. In the end, he found out I was the best buddy he ever had. Oh, he wouldn't go no place without me. But for 2 years. Then we used to go to 69th Street movie, you know, the towers.
Yeah.
I said, I ain't going, God damn if I'm going to pay. So the girl would go in first, and I'm outside looking to see, it was the three of us, you know, looking outside. I'm going to see here who's going to pay. Well, I'm seeing what's playing next week. And he's looking at the other side. It took about 10 to 15 minutes before he broke down and paid for us. Then he was sitting in the middle of us. I get him mad as hell, I hold his hand. we used to have so much fun. And he said I wasn't good for his daughter, that's all.
Now, Frank won the battle with Mr. Tonucci. But you sort of wonder what the young Miss Tonucci was thinking while all this was going on. It would seem at least that she acquiesced to her father's supervision of her courtship, as many did. But other young women, imbibing more liberal ideas around them, or driven mad by an intolerably short leash, often chose another course, as Catherine, the daughter of a Hungarian wagon maker, relates.
Oh, he wouldn't even talk to the young man. He was very ignorant. But I married him anyway.
This is something that intrigues me. How did these old world fathers expect their daughters to get married?
You marry your own kind, according to him. Somebody that he can talk with his opinions.
So what, was it his intention then to choose the husbands for his
daughters? Yeah, he chose it for my sister, and they never got along, and she blamed my father all the time. But I said, you're living in America, why don't you marry who you want?
What was her response?
Well, she just blamed my father. That's all. She wasn't very happy. I had different ideas. In the same household, you wouldn't think we were from the same family.
Were you a flapper?
A what?
Flapper?
Hardly. I wasn't even allowed to go to dances. You weren't no good if you went to dances. Old ideas, you know. We didn't do nothing without our parents' approval in them days.
So what did they permit you to do?
Work. Bring your money home.
That was it. Work and bring your money home. Your father would know when and whom you should marry. Now, an interesting discovery of our interviewing for I Remember When was how common this conflict between young girls and their parents could be in industrial Philadelphia. As I said, girls were supposed to work, bring their money home, and be content. And if they weren't, well, you could always elope, as did both Anne and Anna, who discussed their courtship back in the good old days with Catherine and Josephine.
We didn't have our own lines. We had
let somebody else regulate you.
The last time I was here, the women I talked to had very strict fathers, and the way they got away from that not having their own minds was to run away and get married.
That's what I did.
How old were you when you ran away and got married?
17.
Oh, my.
Yes. Because my mother was strict. My father wasn't strict with me. He was strict with the rest of them, with the boys and all. See, we only had 3 girls and 6 boys.
Oh.
And he was strict with the boys and everything.
How well did you know your husband?
Not too well. He used to go with my brothers. And one Friday night, he asked me to go off and get married, and I says, okay. So we went over and got a ring, and on Saturday he met me in the morning, and I went to Elton, Maryland, and got married. And I didn't know a thing. At them days, you didn't know the facts of life like you do now.
Sex and everything. Nobody told you anything.
Never knew anything. I sat up the first night all night long. I thought I was married a bad man because he took me in the same room with him. In a hotel, and I sat up on a rocking chair. I never went to bed the whole night long. Never.
Your sex was bad, you know. The parents would never talk about sex.
Oh, no, never. No, you never heard anything.
Kids nowadays know
a lot. I had a young fella come to see me. I was 16. He was a Marine, but we knew each other from the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So when he came to the door, my father happened to answer it. He said, I want to see Ann Belita. What do you want? What do you want from her? Huh. I want to see her. So he called me. And he says, what's this? I said, nothing, Pop. He just came home from the Marine and he wants to see me, Calvin does. I'm a little nervous already. He took him by the neck and pushed him out.
Scared. Mm-hmm.
Like I hated my father for that.
In my days.
And you know what the fellow said to me? He met me that evening. I don't know, you remember the Mammoth movies? I guess you don't. I used to live around there. I met him and he says, boy, what a father like you. I wouldn't want you. You were made out of gold. I says, no, I don't blame you.
Yeah, that's what I said. When 17, 18,
it was awful. Well, I didn't even...
After that, she was called an old maid.
Yeah. Really? So 17 or 18?
I got married. I wasn't even 18 yet, I think. 17.
How did you get married?
I had a big wedding. I got married Wednesday and the wedding ended up Saturday.
So your parents... were approved of your
wedding. Oh, yeah, they had a big wedding at home, you know, and even it ended up some of the young boys was put in jail for breaking the porches, you know,
Jimmy had to dance for your money.
How about you, Cecilia?
I got married Wednesday.
I was 21.
And
you probably were
a
dancer Wednesday until Sunday.
Yeah, that's what it was.
She said you couldn't wait.
I know. Yeah,
she was no
housewife.
Yeah,
I
came home.
Oh, she wanted you to keep working and.
Yes, and bring the money home. She said you could have waited. I said I'm old enough. 21 is old enough. So that's when I got married when I was 21.
How long had you known your husband?
Oh, for quite a while. He was from the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's how mine was. Right from the neighborhood.
And how about you, Anna?
What?
How old were you when you were married?
When I got married?
Yeah.
19.
Did you run away?
I ran away, got married, Wilmington, Delaware.
Ran to Delaware.
Well, my trouble was...
And that's what I did.
My father was a matchmaker. I guess you know the foreign people.
Yeah.
He was matching me with a fellow named George Columbus. And
the neighbors used to match each other, their children.
Now, this fellow worked with him.
Yeah.
This fellow worked with him, and he used to say, I like that daughter of yours. But she got too many boyfriends. He says, I'll fix it up for you. This is my father, you know. He says, I want a nice fellow like you. They're always, just because he was a big fellow and a worker, my father thought he's wonderful. He'd come to see me. He'd say, I'll come Wednesday to see your daughter. He'd come Thursday. So I said to my father, Pop, that isn't nice.
Rain.
He stood me up.
The
Thursday he'd come, and he'd sit there eating sauerkraut and kielbasa with my father and drinking beer. And I was in the parlor sitting by myself listening to we used to have a recording record, you know, and I used to play records. I says to my father one next to Pop, that isn't a nice fella. He shouldn't do that, making a fool out of me. A fella tells you he's coming on a Wednesday. He wants to see if you got any other boyfriends. I says, that sounds very stupid to me. But see, my father never agreed with me. He sort of...
Yeah.
I don't know why they were like that. I couldn't make them see things my way. So I used to sneak out with the fellow I worked with. And he said, see, he put me wise. He said, you're afraid of your father too much, and you shouldn't be like that. You're a nice girl, but you don't want to be that scared. So before you know it, we ran away and got married, and that was the end of that. And then my troubles started all over again. It started with nothing. 1929, the last month. My father, I think, lost $3,000 in the bank, and he says to me, I haven't got a cent to give you anything. And I muttered to my mother, I don't think he would give me anything anyway.
He wasn't angry that you'd run away and gotten
married?
Yeah,
he was angry, but he...
But he was he reconciled to it.
My husband had a nice personality, and I think he won him over. He was a nice man, though.
Yeah.
But he had one thing in his mind, to keep that language together.
Yeah.
See, George was Slovak.
Right. And how about your father? How did he feel, or your mother, your parents, when you came back married?
Oh, my mother... I couldn't tell you all the things my mother said to me. She disowned me, she put me out of the house, she did everything. And then she turned to my father, she said, what do you got to say? He said, she said it all. I give her my blessing, you know? But then the next day I started to go over to see my mother, and my husband was working, and his mother was going over with me. And I got partway over, I said, oh, I couldn't go. So somebody told my mother they saw me. So that night I went over and with my husband, and I was crying all the way over. He says, don't cry. So I was swinging a pocketbook and chewing gum, you know, real hard. And I went in and I says, hello, everybody. Oh, if you ever heard all that I took, I'm telling you. And then I was married about 6 weeks, and my mother was going to have my marriage annulled, and oh, what she wasn't going to do. But finally, she said he got down on his knees and asked her if he, you know.
I love the story of Anna sitting up throughout her wedding night in a rocking chair, thinking her husband was a bad man for renting only one room. Now, such naivety or ignorance would be hard to imagine for the current generation of youths. Today, we generally assume that kids should be well informed about sex and the facts of life. But that was not the case back then. And I found it terribly intriguing that women, even when getting married, often only had the sketchiest knowledge about procreation and childbirth. Let's let Mildred explain what they did learn about the facts of life.
They didn't. I didn't. I'm ashamed. Because I remember, I got my period, I guess I was close to 16 already. I like to say in Yiddish, a kalamite already. I was engaged, you know. And my brother was going to work, and I came down, I didn't know, and I started hollering to my mother. I said, Mom, 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 I'm bleeding. So mother got on me, and she said, oh, my brother probably knew what it was, you know. And this is when she told me, and she says to me now, she says, you're a lady. I used to hear people talking about it, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't even know how a baby is conceived. Really, I didn't. And so she told me, and she said, you go out with boys, and she told me the facts of life, you know. And
our mothers didn't tell us.
My mother didn't tell me.
Because I think we learned in school.
No, through the other girls. They didn't teach that in school.
No, I don't mean they teached it. You heard it from children your age, like somebody would say something. But still, when you got married those days, everything was just a mystery. Because you didn't know what you were going through while you were carrying your child. All we knew, when our mothers had a child, there was a stalker. The doctor brought him in a little suitcase. Right?
I was scared to get. I'll tell you the truth. I was scared to get married. Really, I thought it came from the navel. I thought that's the hole, and it opens up, and the baby comes there. I really didn't.
Hmm.
How mysterious and exciting and frightening it all must have been. And how much room for false expectations, disappointments, and disillusionment. But those were times more stoic than our own, and a marriage once consummated was expected to last. Take the case of Mildred and the son of the Irish politician.
And in them days, like, you weren't allowed to marry out of your own, you know. But since I was raised so strict that I despised the Italian people, and that was my father. He was strict. You weren't allowed, you know what I mean, to go with nobody if you went to school. I always worked with my mother. We used to sew coats in them days, and I was the oldest one of the family. And of course, I had to go to school. I had to sew coats, bring them back before I went back to school, and to help out, because my father never had a job, see? And the money wasn't enough with seven children, see? And we knew what the hardship was. And I knew the worst because I was the oldest one, see? And then when I wanted to get married, I wasn't allowed to, you know, to go just with your own. And I said, I didn't want it. I mean, no parts of it. So finally, really, I only went with my husband for 2 months, married him, and got out. And that was in 1929, during Depression. And it was very hard. I have three children.
So you were 18 then?
Yeah.
What sort of man was your husband? How did you meet your husband? What was he like? Tell me the whole story.
The whole thing is this. Since we weren't allowed to bring anybody in, my father was a type of man that if you spoke to a man, he's supposed to come to your house, ask for your hand, like the old timers. That's what they did in them days, see? And you get married.
Strict.
See, you were strict. You weren't allowed to know what they were or anything. So anyhow, we had this Irish family about three doors away from us, see? And this man was a politician. And of course, I used to talk to him all the time because he was only two doors away from us. And finally, I got talking to him. So then I had a girlfriend that I used to go sneak around to see, you know. And because I was allowed to go to work, but I wasn't allowed to go out. My father didn't believe in that. He says, you saw them people all day long. You work with them all day long. He says, now, what do you have to do with them? I said, well, I just want to, you know, get out of the house and go see them. So I used to wear lipstick. I used to get my lipstick and throw it in the alley. And when his back was turned, I'd go back in the alley and go pick it up and put it. We weren't allowed to have nail polish on. See? Well, anyway, this man had this son that I used to go, then my girlfriend used to go with him. And I used to sneak around and go tell him that she wasn't home. Yet she was, but she didn't want to be bothered with him. So with that, I was having it so hard at home, and he come around, he says to me, how about we get married? I says to him, I'll tell you what. I says, give me some money. I says, I'll buy me my dress, my veil, and we go get married. And I got married in St. Rita's Church in Broad and Ellsworth.
That's nice.
Yeah. And even though, you know what I mean, that I wasn't actually in love with the man, but I stuck it out for 46 years, and he just passed away 3 years ago.
That's really a story.
You really didn't know the guy.
No.
That's
what I always say. I mean, we had our hard times. It wasn't easy, because he was a man that liked to go out and drink on a Friday night. Mm. And, I mean, he's not the only one as far as that goes, you know.
But
now, he was Irish.
Yeah, Irish and Dutch.
Irish and Dutch. Now, what did your parents think about you marrying an Irish man?
Forget it. Yeah, they didn't have too much time for me and not too much time for him either.
It seems that back then that, you know, fathers generally were very strict.
I wouldn't want that again, believe me. It's too much. Because when I had my children, you know what I told them? I says, look, you have to put up with them, not me. If you don't want them, don't marry them. Yeah? Because if there's nothing there, they wouldn't do what I did. Believe me. They would take off.
Yeah.
But see, when I went back to my parents, I went back to my parents because things, at that time, I had two small children. I didn't know what the score was, you know? And my father says to me, "Are you married, lady?" I said, "Yes." "You got two children?" "Yes." "You belong home with your husband." Mm. And there it was. Mm-hmm. And I stuck it out. Now, the whole time I was married to him, I was married 46 years to him, he had never said anything about his background, the kids he used to play with. And do you know, a year before he passed away, he knew everybody by their name, who they were, who they wasn't. And it took me over. I said, now we had all this time that we could have talked things out, and he never did.
Well, so far we've heard a good deal about the obstacles that stood between young men and women. What I'd like to do now is turn to some of the stories of what took place at home when boys and girls did go out together in the 1930s. And by the mid-20s, an evening of dancing was the best entertainment in town, and dance halls often featuring the best of the big bands sprang up around the city. There was the Broadwood Hotel, great on Saturdays. You could go to the Valencia on Tuesdays, the Bandbox on Thursday, the Cercolo on Sundays. And Jan Savitt, here playing Quaker City Jazz, was one of the hometown favorites. Anthony, Louise, and Margaret were all three avid dancers.
One night, my sister Annie and I, we went to a formal affair. I had gowns on. And before my father left, he says, "If any of you girls leave this house tonight," he says, "just get prepared for a good beating." He had to go to some society that they used to belong to. So this here fella, "What, come and pick you up at the house?" "No way." This here fella used to work in a bank. I called him, I said, I forgot his name. I says to him, "Look, don't come to the house." I said, "I'll meet you on 13th Street." "What?" He says, "I'm used to picking girls at their home." I says, "Well, this is one girl you can't pick up." Mm-hmm. I said, if you don't want to meet me on 13th Street, I won't be able to come out." But he thought it was terrible. So we went to the ball, and we went to this ball, and we got home in time. Got home about, we were just in the bedroom, ready to get undressed. My father walks in, but we didn't have a chance to get undressed. Mm-hmm. My sister and I stuck ourselves in bed with our evening gowns, and we put our, wrapped the blanket sheet around our head, and he came in and he checked us.
Yeah.
I said, "A good thing he didn't go a little further."
It's a good thing. It's
he
a
just
good
saw
thing.
The oh, evening yeah. gowns. This is,
well, he's got away with murder.
Got away with murders. Yeah.
But you know, in those days when we went to dances, we did wear gowns.
Oh, yeah.
Not like today. We wore long, beautiful gowns
they
and
did.
Beautiful
yeah.
shoes, because by this time we're old, we're working, we're 17, 18, 19, and we're working, and we never wore a shirt dress at a dance. Everything was formal.
Well, even when we wore the boards, remember in Atlantic
City?
Oh,
yeah, we get all dressed up. Down Atlantic City, that was the thing. Oh,
then we'd go to the Million Dollar Pier where they used to have dancing.
Dancing
on
the there,
yeah.
too. The ballroom and Million Dollar Pier.
They had
pier.
The big band.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You were still young when you were 17. I mean, really young.
You were a kid.
You were a kid.
You weren't a young adult.
You weren't, like today, 17. They're married, have babies. And
today, 30.
They're like
today,
little 30, old ladies yeah. today. And the boys know so much. I always call them the young old generation, because they're so,
worldly wise,
and their childhood's really wasted.
They don't have it.
They don't have fun like we did. They don't have young years the way we did, and have fun.
We played. We played like children.
We had experiences. It was really wonderful when we look back, outside of the hard times. But I think when you're younger, you don't pay attention to those hard times. It goes out of your mind.
So how should we sum up our tour of romance in the Quaker City? I don't know how representative the experiences recounted here were for people in the city as a whole. Among those we interviewed, though, this was typical of the way things were when growing up in the industrial neighborhoods. If you think about it, you'd expect the heavies or the bad guys to be the proprietors or floor bosses of the sweatshops and factories in which many young Philadelphians labored. But this was not, as a rule, the case. More often, it was the old world father who loomed as the heavy, who thwarted youth's ambitions and expectations. Now, as we heard earlier, girls were kept strict. They did what they were told and were told little. And it strikes me, then, that what we were witnessing were accounts of a monumental struggle spanning generations, a war that raged between old world parents valiantly attempting to maintain the old ways pitted against their Americanizing offspring. There were many casualties, tales of heroism and cowardice, traumatic discoveries and tragic losses, thrilling narratives of escape and recapture, of enduring hatreds and heartwarming reconciliations. It was a struggle that still flares sporadically in households throughout the city, but today is only a shadow of the great wars of which many of our older brethren are the veterans.
Interfere with people. The heart is an involuntary muscle.
And if I kiss you in the garden, in the moonlight, will you pardon me, come tiptoe?